Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Why is there a balloon in front of me? What is this doing in here? Will you guys explain this to me later? We're continuing with open forum. Shoot it down. The number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Continuing with open forum, but brand new guest, Mark Brumley, the president of Ignatius Press, the most significant, powerful, impressive, and well-respected publisher in the Alpha Quadrant. Hello, Mark Brumley.
You know, the truth is that balloon is a spy balloon sent by Ignatius Press, checking out what's going on at Catholic Answers.
Is that what you all are up to?
We distribute so many of your books because they're outstanding. We can't do all of them because we only have so much room in our catalog. But we distribute so many of your books, but sometimes there's a little delay between when you release something and when it gets in our catalog. So we decided we're going to send a spy balloon.
All right. That must not be easy to send a spy balloon from San Francisco to San Diego. I don't think that there are any winds that blow that way.
That's tricky.
So it's tricky. It's tricky. But we manage it. The number is 888-318-7884. Call, ask Mark whatever you like about the Catholic Church, whether you're Catholic or not. As a matter of fact, we love talking with non-Catholics. Maybe you're a Protestant brother or sister. Maybe you're of another religion. Maybe you're of no religion at all. What is this about the Pope? Or you want to know something about Jesus? We love talking about Jesus. Bible, morality, whatever it is, 888-318-7884. And I have an idea for a book that I want to pitch you, Mark.
Go for it, man. All right. Right here.
It's kind of high concept. Let's say somebody loses some tapes for, say, 30 years, and they're tapes of Pope Benedict delivering lectures on God and creation.
Somebody
finds the tapes, transcribes them, and makes a book out of them. What do you think of this? This is like a spy thriller, but it's lectures from Pope Benedict. What do you think of that idea?
Man, I think I've read this novel before. I mean, this is like a plot I'm familiar with.
Wait, what?
I've heard it before, right? Is this like a TV show or something?
It is not. It's the new book from Ignatius Press called Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger. That's not the name of it. From Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger, Benedict XVI. It's called The Divine Project, Reflections on Creations and the Church. And it was lost for 30 years, and you all found it.
Wow. That's it. That's where I heard that story before.
Yes, oh, yeah. You lived
that's
it.
Correct.
Tell me about this.
We didn't find it, but they found him in Germany. And we published them along with other international publishers, but we did the English language edition of that book. And that book, it's funny, I'm doing a course with my son-in-law, Tom Harmon, at University of St. Thomas in Houston, on the writings of Benedict XVI, Joseph Ratzinger. We're doing like a college-level course. It's got undergraduates and graduates and just other people that are auditing. And one of the books that they've used for that course is a book called In the Beginning, which is actually it's four homilies, I think, in an appendix by Joseph Ratzinger on the subject of creation. And if you take that book In the Beginning and take that book Divine Project, you'll see they're very similar, because In the Beginning was based on homilies that he gave in, I think, 1981, but this is based on lectures that he gave in 85. And there's other stuff there besides the topics that are addressed in common with In the Beginning. There's stuff on the ecclesiology of the church and Vatican II and all this kind of stuff. But our book, The Divine Project, these topics are addressed in more depth because he's not giving a homily. He's giving more of a lecture. So that's the backstory of that. And it's really an amazing book. We talked about it last night, I think, in our online course. It's amazing his treatment of the doctrine of creation, how to read the Bible. When you hear the idea of creation, read Genesis 1, and nowadays modern science, people say, well, obviously modern science has discredited Genesis 1. And if you think that Genesis 1 is written as an account of modern science, then yeah, it discredited it. But in fact, we understand that the ancient, divinely inspired biblical author is using images and ideas from his time to express the timeless truth that God is the creator of the universe, and some other things about God as creator as well. And what's fascinating, this book talks about that, but it also says, but, you know, that makes it sound, it kind of sounds like, well, the church just thought that up, right? You know, church all these years teaching Genesis straightforward, and then modern science comes along and says the earth is, or the universe is 13.8 billion years old, and it wasn't, the universe wasn't made in 6 days. And so it sounds like, hey, you guys are just trying to backtrack, you know, kind of cover yourself.
Right, right.
Ratzinger answers that objection. He does a brilliant job of answering that objection, and he shows how the Bible itself gives us reason to understand that these are differing images that the biblical authors had of creation. This is not something that the church concocted only in the 20th century, but this is something that's been part of our history and our tradition approaching Genesis 1 over the last 2,000 years. So they're skeptics.
Does he say that in the lecture?
Well,
so that, or was that an editorial addition?
That was a dynamic equivalence translation.
Okay, I'm very glad to hear you're doing dynamic equivalence now. Well, Ratzinger, a kind of student of Augustine.
Yes.
And so Augustine himself wrote a great deal on this, on those passages that are, you know, supposedly debunked. And certainly Augustine did not have a simplistic view of Genesis.
No, and they're different. He has different renditions of his interpretation of Genesis. But like a lot of the early fathers, you know, they're thinking, well, you know, God created the world just like that. You know, yeah. Not 7 days or 6 days or 13.8 billion years, just like that. You know, yeah. So but then what? How do we read Genesis? And his view is that these are sort of, there's a hierarchy of being described, and you know how God is designed things with this hierarchy from simple to complex, and then in the end, the 7 days. You know, Augustine gets this, and of course a lot of the fathers get this, and Ratzinger underscores this. What's the seven part of the 7 days about? Well, the seven is God's covenant and creation. So it's about God wanting to create us to be in a covenant relationship with him. But, you know, the 6 days are God's orderly workmanship, as if God were doing a work week, you know,
yeah,
putting in a work week of creating the universe, very orderly and all of that. But that's figurative language. That's the, you know, the biblical writer in Genesis 1 is using that language. Elsewhere in the Bible, we have the same accounts of creation told in different ways. And then, of course, the big whammy is John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. We Christians understand creation in light of Jesus Christ. So you see, the Bible itself is repeatedly telling the story of creation from different vantage points using different images. And so should we – it's not, as I say, it's, as Ratzinger says, it's not something that the church thought up in 1945,
right, yeah,
to deal with the findings of, you know, ancient mythologies or something. Anyway.
The new book is called The Divine Project, Reflections on Creation and the Church. It's by – at the time, he was Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger and lost for 30 years and – it was going to be a novel that I was going to write, but it was reality, and it's, as is often the case, wilder than a novel, probably. The number here is 888-318-7884. I think we better take our first break, and then we'll head off to take some calls. So there's two lines open, 888-318-7884.
Your questions, Catholic Answers, live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Save the date. Saturday, August 26th is the day, and Birmingham, Alabama is the place for the 2023 EWTN Family Celebration. We're celebrating Mother Angelica's love for the Eucharist. And join us to mark the centennial year of Mother's birth. Make your plans now to attend this free event. More details coming soon at our Family Celebration webpage, ewtn.com/family celebration.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers. Why does this balloon keep making an appearance? Is there any way I can get this out of here? Could someone shoot the balloon down for me? 888-318-7884. Pamela in Dallas, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. You are up first this hour. Pamela, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Mark Brumley.
Hi, Mark. Can you hear me?
Hey. Yes.
Hi. Hi. Thank you so much. Happy Valentine's Day. So I'm going to read my question because I know. Okay. Is it a good idea for my cousin to start going to Mass and confession and participating in the parish life at an SSPX church, even though they're not 100% in communion with the Pope, given that their sacraments are valid? She loves the traditional Latin Mass, and there's an SSPX church that's close to her home. The people there, she has found, shares her values. She loves that they didn't close during the pandemic. They just kept offering Masses. And then she has no intention of separating from the Pope. She just feels that she will have a richer spiritual life and experience of the liturgy and sacraments there. Also, she wants a good confessor who will actually care about her spiritual progress, not just forgive her sins. And she knows she will get it there because her experience now is she tries to go to confession regularly, but when she mentions like her defects, the priest just keeps telling her, that's not a sin. Anyway, so her husband wants a letter from a priest saying it's okay for her to attend Mass there before she actually starts going to Mass there. And I just told her I'm going to ask Catholic Answers what they think. So... thank you.
Well, what do we think, Mark?
Sounds like
she said.
Sounds like she kind of faded there. So
she faded out on you. Sorry, that was probably on our end.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Mark just didn't look like he knew that it was time to answer the question. SSPX, Mark, can we go to Mass there?
Here's the deal, you know. So they're ministers, although they are, you know, baptized. They're not in full communion with the church, so they're not Catholic ministers. That is to say, that doesn't mean they're not, their priests aren't ordained, validly ordained in all of that, but they're ministering in a way where they're not under lawful authority. So normally Catholics ought not to attend masses or Eucharistic celebrations celebrated by ministers, even when they're validly ordained, that are not under proper church authority. So SSPX would be in that category. Now, but there are exceptions, you know, when you can't get to Mass anywhere else, Mass isn't available somewhere else, or there's a genuine spiritual good to be obtained that you can't obtain somewhere else or readily obtain somewhere else. And it may be that if you're, was it your sister, Pamela?
Oh, hang on. I put Pamela on hold. Sorry, Pamela. Go ahead. Was it your sister?
Oh,
sorry. It's my cousin, and just to clarify, she has access. Yeah, she has access to go to Mass, like a Novus Ordo Mass, but she does not have easy access to a traditional Latin Mass.
Okay, thanks. So, you know, she shouldn't be going to an SSPX Mass if she has, you know, a valid and spiritually beneficial, I know it gets a little slippery, but, you know, alternative Mass, that's where she should go to Mass, even if she has a preference for the old Mass and so on. But I understand people will say, you know, when I go to this Mass, I'm not sure whether the priest is celebrating the Mass licitly. As you say, he's giving bad advice in confession. And so that could be, at least the canonists tell me, that could be a legitimate reason someone might go to an SSPX church, a parish or congregation or whatever, as opposed to the local Catholic parish. But it's a very extraordinary situation. I doubt seriously your cousin's going to find a Catholic priest that's going to write a letter that says, yeah, that's okay, because it is so circumstance by circumstance. But I would say, you know, it's better that she's if she's not going to go to what we used to call the ordinary form. We'll just say the Mass according to 69 Missal. Not going to go to an ordinary Novus Ordo Mass, no matter what. Then it's probably better that she attend the SSPX. But I would urge her to, you know, try to find a Mass somewhere where the priests celebrate it licitly as well as validly, and they give good advice in confession and so on. That's what I would recommend.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Pamela. Thank you very, very much. The number is 888-318-7884. It's open forum. Mark Brumley is our guest, and we're going to Colorado now. Daniel's in Colorado listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Daniel, go ahead with your question for Mark.
Well, first thing, you need to make sure you have your stuff copyrighted before Mark steals your ideas.
I know, right?
I'm sorry.
Mark's stealing things right now. At this very moment, he's stealing ideas from me. But thank you, Daniel, for defending me. I appreciate it. If you're a copyright lawyer, call me later, will you?
Will do. Will do.
All right.
Exchange information.
Okay.
All right. So why does the church take so long to define the Immaculate Conception and the Assumption?
Immaculate Conception, the Assumption.
Yeah.
Well, I think the answer to the question is somewhat speculative in the sense that why does it take anything so long to happen in the church? You know, it's because I can speak in general terms. God reveals certain things, but it's not always clear what he's revealed. And sometimes it takes time for the church to discern that based on reflecting on, you know, the gospel, what the gospel teaches, how the church worships and practices, and over time, you know, there are things that are part of sort of the lore of the church that people accept, but, you know, when you come down to actually scrutinizing them, you see, well, no, that was kind of a custom or a small T tradition, but the church really didn't put her full weight of teaching or full weight of believing behind that, and so that turns out to maybe be true, maybe not, but it's not something that Catholics are obliged to accept. So that's a process that takes a long time often, and in fact it took a very long time in the case of the Immaculate Conception and the Assumption. With respect to the Immaculate Conception, there was a kind of a bigger theological problem in that it seemed on the surface to be in conflict with the idea that everybody is affected by original sin. All human beings are affected by original sin, and Jesus is the Redeemer of all human beings. And it took the church a while to say, and at the same time, there was this teaching of the church that Mary was holy and that she was protected by the Holy Spirit. And so how do you reconcile all those things? And what's the priority? What's the guiding principle that all the other things that are taught are subordinated to? And it really, even Thomas Aquinas kind of got this one wrong when he was trying to uphold the truth that everybody is subject to sin and Jesus is the savior of everybody who's saved. And therefore, how do we fit Mary into that? And it really took a lot of time and thinking and prayer for the church to manage to find how these things all fit together. Same thing with respect to the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Yeah, early traditions about Mary being bodily assumed, but that seemed to kind of take a little bit of the shine off of the resurrection and ascension of Jesus. And so isn't he primary in our faith? We refer to him as the author and finisher of the faith. We talk about him being the firstborn among all creation, firstborn among the dead. Paul talks about that in Ephesians and in Colossians. So this primacy of Jesus in the new creation seems to might be seen as being diminished by Mary. But as the church reflected on the fact that, no, very early on, her bodily transformation was believed and acknowledged, how does that fit? Is that something that was just an idea or a custom or a legend? Or is that something that's part of the faith? And again, reflecting on what the fathers came to see about Mary's role, that she's the new Eve. Well, if she was the new Eve on the front end in saying yes to the incarnation and redemption of Jesus, as the fathers of the church came to see, then maybe she's also the new Eve on the back end in sharing in the new life of the resurrection and the glorification of the church in the ascension. So, but that's a process that takes a while. These things, you know, God allows us for good or ill. It has to be, obviously, it has to be for God's good, and I, and it can be for our ill if we're sinful about it. God allows the church to have these things unfolded to her over time. I don't, does that make it, I'd like to hear what you think about that, Daniel.
Daniel?
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
That's a good answer. I'm just trying to contemplate in terms of the positive phase and the development of it over time, that how, trying to reconcile that with how that was finally decided.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Daniel. Let me ask you this. I think one of the temptations that Catholics have, because we have a magisterium, is to kind of look upon the magisterium with a kind of what I call the oracle view of the magisterium. It's like as if the Pope and the bishops are like oracles, and we can go and ask them questions, and they can, like an oracle, they can just have this sort of answer. And that's actually not how Christ set up the church. Christ set up the church to be guided over time, and our human sort of social learning, teaching, tradition, passing on the faith is the normal, ordinary way in which we come to know Jesus and what Jesus has revealed. And it, the Holy Spirit guides that ordinary human process. Yeah, there are extraordinary instances, like when something becomes such a matter of dispute that authority has to address it in, with the full force that Christ has given the church to teach on a thing. But ordinarily, you know, just the ordinary process of teaching and believing and living out the faith is what Jesus intends for his followers. So I guess my question for you is, does that distinction between kind of an ordinary teaching pastoral leadership role in the church and, on the other hand, kind of a treating the magisterium as an oracle kind of bridge the gap between maybe your expectation of what, how you think things like the Immaculate Conception and the Assumption of Mary ought to be taught versus how they actually have been taught?
Yes, that is helpful.
Great. I'm going to leave it there then, before any more trouble starts with Daniel. I appreciate that, Daniel.
Man.
Thank you very, very much.
We want to get out of the lion's den.
I know.
Daniel.
Oh, well done. Well done. And Daniel just left the lion's den. But thanks for the call, Daniel. Leo in Rochester, New York is up next. Leo's watching on YouTube. Leo, thanks
Leo
for waiting.
The lion, man.
Oh,
Leo
look at
the
lion. We went from the lion to Leo, which means lion. Leo, you got a question for Mark?
Yeah, hey, you guys hear me?
Very well.
All right, perfect. So so I know a lot of people who will like, obviously I know everyone commits sin, that's like not a given, but I know a lot of people who, when they commit sin, they have like, they're in this kind of denial stage where they can say like, oh no, it's not sin. It's like, there was no harm in it or something like that. So my question was, how do you, I'm not sure, really sure if convince is like the best word, because like if I try to convince them, they just don't believe it. But how do you like try to get them to believe? That's the same thing, but still, like, how do you try to get them to believe what they are committing is a sin?
Well, I guess I would go back and say, where do they get their idea? Well, I'm assuming we're talking about people who believe in God and have some understanding of God. Is that correct?
Yes, all these people are Catholic.
So they're Catholic. So then I guess I would ask them, how do they understand what is or isn't sin? Where do they go to make these determinations? Like, you know, would they say, for example, murder? Is murder a sin?
They definitely believe that.
Yeah, and I'd say, well, okay, if they're as Catholics and they encounter another Catholic and that Catholic says, no, I don't think murder is a sin, ask them what they would say. How would they try to convince that person that murder is a sin?
Well, they is that a rhetorical or an actual question?
Yeah, well, I'm asking you what you think they would say.
They would definitely say, because it causes a harm and it causes anguish to other people. Like, it would just it directly harms multiple people, like her victims' families, the murderer's families, like the murderer himself, and like other things. But there's a bunch of chain reactions.
But again, they're assuming that those things are wrong, that we shouldn't harm other people. And I'm like, well, where do you get that idea? Because obviously there are plenty of people in the world who think that when you can do it and not get caught, it's okay. So where do they get that idea from, that it's wrong to harm other people?
Leo, I'll tell you what, you got to hang on because we got to take this break, Leo. Hang on and we'll finish. We'll let you answer Mark and Mark get his full answer to you right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As a child, the great theologian Thomas Aquinas asked, "What is God?" Best-selling author Kevin Vost's new book follows the mature thought of Aquinas in answering that question. In clear and approachable fashion, "What is God?" examines God's attributes and considers questions about him that have vexed mankind for centuries. Order your copy of "What is God?" today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
As Catholic apologetics have gotten stronger, Protestant responses have gotten stronger as well. And now they have their own answers to rebut the standard Catholic proofs. Don't fret, we've got you covered. In his new book, Meeting the Protestant Response, apologist Carlo Broussard gives well-reasoned biblical answers to Protestant comebacks. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Response today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Tomorrow on More to Life, feeling frazzled.
Are you feeling overwhelmed or stressed out? We'll help you get control.
That's tomorrow on More to Life. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Leo is on the line. Leo in Rochester, New York. Rochester. Who does that remind you of?
Yeah. Jack Benny.
Jack Benny. How many times the people of Rochester must get that all? Well, maybe not anymore because it's probably not that many who remember Jack Benny. But yeah. Take his wife.
New generation. YouTube's bringing up a new generation.
Oh,
man.
That's true. Yeah, right. But Leo, look. I think this is a common problem, actually. So I'm interested in this conversation because we have we are in kind of denial about sin. We're like, I don't know. Is that we're very negotiable on sin these days?
Right. Yeah. And I guess my point, Leo, is like, where do these people who identify as Catholic go to for deciding whether something is a sin or not, and ask them to try to be consistent in that? They say they go to the Bible. Okay. Well, do they go to the church? And so when they're saying something that the church says is a sin is not a sin, but then they say something else that the church says is a sin, and they say, yeah, that is a sin, how do they make a decision? How do they decide when to go with the church and when not to go with the church? That's what I would ask them.
Yeah, it's like – I'm not going to get into specifics, but in this case, like even like with – like I even like pulled up the catechism – of the church, and I just quoted it, and they still like, and the response was, I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's just.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but it was, like I don't. Like, sorry. Go ahead.
It's not like they're like Protestant or like Sola Scriptura or anything like that. They just, their response is just, I mean, because like also this sin that we're talking about isn't mentioned in the Bible at all. So it's not, it has nothing to do with like Sola Scriptura. It's just like they just don't believe it. That's it.
I see.
Sin, even with
so it's this, I don't know, sounds like they are not sold on the idea that this thing is a sin, but they're not completely willing to just say, the church is wrong on that. Is that correct?
Yeah.
They're kind of slipping
okay,
and sliding.
So, yeah. So, like, so approach one is try to establish what's the principle by which we as Catholics, people who choose to identify as Catholic, figure out what God has said about this stuff, about right and wrong. So that's one thing. And then we may find things that we know the church teaches and we may feel like I'm not really comfortable with that or I don't understand that. Well, that's point two. Point two is then to look at the thing itself and try to make sense out of it. Why does the church say that that's wrong? You know, in an ideal universe, we'd all just say, well, whatever God has revealed, that's what I'm going with. The church has been authorized by Jesus to teach what God has revealed. So whatever the church teaches, that's what I'm going with. That'd be the ideal world. But we don't live in an ideal world. And so oftentimes people's ability to accept what the church teaches is aided by the sense that the church is wise, so that this makes sense. That's a kind of backing into a proper Catholic way of approaching these things. But it's better to back into it than to just be off doing your thing by yourself. So that's why I'd say I need to know more what the particular sin we're talking about is to have much more to say about that.
Sorry, I'm just trying to find a way that I can say it and not get you guys kicked off YouTube or anything.
I think I can guess. I'm just going to guess. It's a sin involving self-stimulation.
Not actually, no, that's not it.
Oh,
wow.
Well, shows you where I live.
Oh, yeah, it's contraception.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
All right.
Oh, contraception. Well, then, you know, what I would do is I would go get some resources on that subject that help explain what the teaching is and show why it is wise and good, and then that may help. If it's just a matter of, well, the church teaches, yeah, that's going to be rough for people if they're not already disposed to receive the church's teaching.
I'll tell you what, I'd like to give you a book because Catholic Answers published an absolutely brilliant book on contraception, the name of which is escaping me at the moment. Somebody help me. The book on the one with the essays, and it's...
Yeah.
Oh, so, do you know the one I'm talking about, Mark?
Yeah, no. But I can't think of the title.
I can't believe it just went out of my head, right? I was about to give it to him. Okay, it's going to come to me.
Have it here. Man. Isn't that embarrassing?
Yeah,
well,
it's
at least
so
it wasn't
embarrassing.
A book we published.
Oh, what? Well, go ahead. Give the one you published, and I'm going to find
the
one.
I was going to say, at least it wasn't a we.
Oh yeah, no, I would never forget a book.
Ours is Why Humanae Vitae was right, and we have Why Humanae Vitae is Still Right by Janet Smith.
That's a clever one. The second title.
Right.
Okay. Anybody got it?
What's the Catholic Answers one?
All right, it's going
to
come to me.
It's like one of these one word things.
Yeah. It's such a good book. I'm like so proud that I work at Catholic Answers every time I think that we publish this book, and now I'm complete inseparable. That's
inseparable.
You were right. It's a one word answer. Inseparable. Five perspectives on sex, life, and love in defense of Humanae Vitae. One of the best books ever written on the human body. I mean, if I could be that bold, I mean, that's what you got to cover. And so I'll tell you what, I'm going to send you that book. And there are some essays in there. When you read them, you could easily say to somebody else, look, I read this essay. You don't have to read the whole book. Just read this essay. It's really going to change your world, because it will. It's beautiful, beautiful stuff. All right. I finally remembered. Thanks, Leo. I'm going to go to Aaron in Hastings, Michigan now, watching on YouTube. Aaron, go ahead with your question for Mark Brumley.
Hi, Mark. I've actually been reading the Catholic, the early church was the Catholic Church.
Yes.
And I'm the chapter on the baptismal. I was actually wondering, is infant baptism good enough when it's done in the Catholic Church, or should they also be rebaptized when they get older?
So you can. So the Catholic view is a view held. It's common with most other Christian groups, including, you know, Lutherans and Presbyterians and Anglicans. It's only one baptism. So if you're baptized once, then you're baptized. And if you're and this is where we differ from some, not the Anglicans and the Lutherans and the Presbyterians and the Methodists, but the Baptists. We believe that you can be baptized as an infant. So if you're baptized as an infant, there's no need to be baptized. And in fact, you cannot be baptized again when you get older. Whereas Baptists say you can't baptize as a baby. So if you're baptized as a baby and you get older, you got to be rebaptized. Or they would say it's not rebaptized, but you got to be baptized. So basic answer, one baptism, Ephesians 4:5, one baptism. That's it for the forgiveness of sins, whether you're a baby or an adult.
Aaron, thank you. I appreciate that call. I'm realizing what time it is, and I got to get more folks on the line.
Yeah. We got to moving, man.
I think I took literally half the show trying to remember the name of Inseparable. One of my favorite books, and I could not remember the name of it. Alice in North Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Go ahead with your question for Mark. No? Oh, I know why Alice is not on. I got flustered, and now I'm pushing the wrong buttons, Alice. Alice, go ahead. I apologize about that. Go ahead with your question
for
Mark.
That's all right. I'm on hold until your program is over, so you go ahead.
Oh, you want me? Okay, I'll go back to another call. No, I'm just kidding now. Go ahead, Alice. Ask your question.
Me?
Yes, you.
Yes.
Okay, I need some history on the relationship between the parts of the Mass, the readings of the Mass, the Psalms, and the Gospels.
Wonderful.
So that when we're supposed to be studying those on Sunday, we read through them, and at the end, you know, of each, then you kind of get, well, how can you apply this to your life? You don't really study what you're reading, and I'd like to look at it from a historical, cultural, Jewish background, and how the people that put our Mass together. They worked hard to get those readings and the Psalms and everything to fit. And I'd like to make it more meaningful. I bring in historical facts, which most of them know nothing of, like the washing of the feet. They have no idea why you would do that, you know, or about the stone by the house and that kind of thing. And it makes it meaningful when you put it in history.
Okay. So Alice, do you have a question?
Are we lost?
No, Alice, just specifically, you when you say you want a history, do you want Mark to give you the history of the Mass, or
I was just wondering if there's any literature written that explains the parts of the Mass and their relationship as far as the readings and the Gospel go.
Yes.
So that when we read it, we've got some meat to talk about.
Wonderful. Yeah. Okay. What do you got, Mark?
So if you're talking about actually the Mass itself, I mean, I think Jimmy Akin's book, is it Mass Appeal?
Yep. But yeah. I don't know. Is Mass Appeal, it's not available in print. I think you got to get the Kindle version.
Well, I would encourage then Ted Shree's book, Biblical Walk Through the Mass. Goes through the biblical background on the Mass and history and the readings and all of that. So that's what I'd recommend. But I'm not sure. I'm still not sure I'm understanding what Alice is looking for. Alice, if you mean like you want something that gives you the background on the readings themselves, not, you know, not just the Mass, but the readings in the lectionary. Is that what you're asking for?
Like, for instance, last Sunday, our Lord gave the best doggone sermon. And of course, when you look at it, it's the Sermon on the Mount, but it's made for the people.
Right.
He brought it down from the Pharisees and the bigwigs down to us.
Right.
And to be able to relate those things together to make it more meaningful for people.
Right.
You know.
Well, I would recommend people get people. Right. Well, what I would recommend is people get a copy of the Catholic or the Ignatius Catholic Study Bible, the New Testament, and we got all these Old Testament booklets, and just follow the readings. As you're going through the Sunday readings, you read them in your Bible, and then look them up in your study Bible and read the interpretive notes, and that'll help you understand more deeply what those readings are about.
Alice, in addition to that, I'm going to suggest two things. Well, first of all, I'm going to send you our book, 20 Answers to the Mass, because there were multiple questions in there, and I want to give you the resources that we have. So I'd like to send you that book. But also, we have a new podcast. I don't know if you do podcasting, but we have a new podcast from Carlo Broussard called The Sunday Catholic Word. And what he does kind of just what you're talking about, for the reading that's coming up each Sunday. So each Friday, the Sunday Catholic Word drops a new episode, and it's about the reading coming on Sunday. So maybe check out the Sunday Catholic Word, see if that does what you're looking for. If these things do not, the things that Mark suggested and that I suggested do not, I hope you'll call back, because I do feel like there was some confusion, and I feel responsible for some of that confusion. So I'd be happy to have whatever follow-up conversation you'd like, Alice. But just hang on. We'll get your address. We'll send you that book. And then, because I got to take a break right now, call back anytime, and we'll see, if you have a follow-up, we'll see what we can do. Right back with more Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
St. John Paul II stated that, for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation.
So we know we're called, but how do we do it?
St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
EWTN is everywhere. EWTN radio programming is provided free of charge to over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio stations. It's a great teaching tool for Catholics and non-Catholics alike. For a complete list of EWTN AM and FM stations across America, visit EWTNradio.net. At the bottom of the page, click Affiliates. EWTN, the global Catholic network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Always have fun when Mark Brumley's here. Sometimes too much fun, so much so that I confuse the caller and make it more difficult for them to ask their question. And then I go home and I feel ashamed for the rest of the evening. It's a horrible downward cycle, but here we are. It's open forum. You can call and ask whatever you like. Mark Brumley is president of Ignatius Press, which is located, as many people know, just north of here in the Alpha Quadrant. You should check him out at Ignatius.com. Jacob in Oklahoma is next, listening on 88.3 FM. Jacob, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Mark.
Yeah, I have what I think is a simple question. I was actually looking just for a good resource that kind of gives outlines of all the historical heresies, just kind of a good synopsis. I keep running into them, and I keep having to look them up and remind myself. So I'm just looking for kind of a consolidated resource I can read through and memorize it a little better.
Very good. Well, I would recommend Hilaire Belloc's book, The Great Heresies.
Okay, easy enough.
It is easy enough.
There you go.
Well, when you first read Hilaire Belloc, and then tell us if it's easy enough. But he's a great, great writer. I think you'll enjoy the book, Jacob.
It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Thank you very, very much. I'm going to go to Joseph in Vancouver, Washington, listening on the great modern day Catholic radio, one of the great rocks of Catholic radio. Joseph, go ahead with your question for our guest, Mark Brumley.
Thank you.
In this cold weather now that we've got, and with all the homelessness going on here, how can a good Catholic pass by a homeless person, maybe give a buck or two, but then pass them by? How can they do that and still feel righteous when it seems like Jesus would take them home?
Well, I guess it depends on the circumstances of the person who's passing by. And a lot of times, I have interactions with homeless people around Ignatius Press all the time. And oftentimes those folks don't want to be taken anywhere. So I'm not sure
the situation is, well, what about people that are okay, but what about
they should take somebody who's homeless home with them permanently, or take someone home who's homeless with them
do something more substantial to help them.
Okay. You know, yeah. Well, that's important. Gotcha. And that's valuable.
Like, for instance, the good Samaritan story.
Yeah. You know? Right.
With the priest, in fact, that crossed the road to avoid the person, and then the good Samaritan came and took him home, basically.
Well, he didn't take him home. He took him to a place to live, but he didn't take him home, right?
Well, okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, then that kind of action.
I think that's
something.
When we find homeless people who are interested in that, I think we Catholics should do what we can to help them. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Is there a problem with that answer?
Well, only in that kind of, what does that depend on? Does that depend on your own conscience about what it is
or what? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll just tell you a story of my own, Joseph. At a certain point working in a home for homeless folks, I knew that this was not a place for children, so that if I was going to have a family, I had to have a home where this wasn't going on. So, I mean, you know, a mother is driving her kids home from school and sees the person on the street. It's a wonderful example for her, for the children, and a good thing for her to give money to, but she should not bring that person home with the children if she doesn't know that person. So I think that's all Mark is saying, is these things depend on the circumstances of the person.
The person that would be helping the homeless person. Of course, it also depends upon the circumstance of the homeless person.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're dealing with people who have issues of mental health, and they can be dangerous as well. So it's hard to make a generalization, but I will make this generalization. All of us Catholics can do a better job of being more attentive to others in need. And many of us Catholics could do a better job of being attentive to homeless people in need. So I would say that.
And it's not a it's not an add-on to care for the poor either as a Christian. It's an obligation.
No, it's part of it. It's part of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Sure.
Right.
But I don't want to do. I mean, I'm willing to say I can do more. What I'm not willing to do is if Cy Kellett is in a situation where Cy Kellett feels as if he can't help this particular homeless person, that I'm going to say, oh, you're committing a sin, Cy Kellett. So I could say that about Mark Brumley, but I can't say that about Cy Kellett. And I wouldn't say that about Joseph, you, either, Joseph.
Okay. All right. Well, again, it just hurts, you know, kind of makes me feel bad that I can't do more than give him a few bucks.
I think that I think that your response shows that you have a heart for God and you have a heart for the poor and helping people who are homeless. And I think that's good. And I think your call is a challenge to all of us to try to do more, to be more sensitive, to be more creative. I don't want to shove this issue away from responsibility of Catholics as individual people because that is there. But at the same time, we also have to say, is there a social responsibility for us to create a kind of society where people aren't homeless? So that's also important, and we've got to work for that as well. So both of those things are involved. But I'm going to push back a little bit on the idea that anytime somebody doesn't attend to a homeless person by taking that person home with them, that person is not following Jesus or
is somehow. Oh, well, I guess that's a little extreme. But in fact, taking them. Going the extra mile, I guess, and taking them to a homeless shelter, for instance, something like that.
And I've done that before in my own life, and worked on the issue of homelessness when I worked for the Diocese of San Diego back just after Jesus rose from the dead and ascended into heaven in ancient times. So I can personally say, that is absolutely right. So. Amen.
Well, I think I'm going to go. I have a list of phone numbers for homeless shelters and so forth. And the next time I see this person who seems to be a regular at this one spot, I'm going to give them that list at least. And
I think that's good.
You should also.
And I know it's different there. You're in Washington. It's different than it is here in the Bay Area, where the weather, even in the winter, is not really generally all that cold. But it's good to talk to people and get a sense of who they are, but certainly give them information about the shelters. It's a sad thing about our society that there are people who are homeless who are resistant to going someplace. And I know one technique that some people use, and I think this is a good thing, if you can sometimes homeless people are leery of getting in somebody's car and going someplace with them too, because they've been robbed and all kinds of things have happened. But, sometimes if people can be taken to a hotel and allowed to, get cleaned up and experience, something closer to an ordinary, day in the life, that can be helpful too. But I think the idea of, making available people list of homeless shelters and things of that sort is a great idea.
Joseph, God bless you. Thank you very, very much for the call. I do appreciate that conversation. I've more and more, Mark, become of the mind that two calls that we don't get enough are the calls on how to be a peacemaker and how to be charitable. And I always try to give those a little bit of extra air, and I hope we gave Joseph enough time because
that was good.
It's easy to talk about certain controversies that we have with Protestants or whatever that is, but sometimes we do need the talk that's convicting of us, that we're under an obligation to be peaceful in this world and to bring peace to our families and to our towns and our countries, and we're obligated. And we're invited, we're called to be charitable. That's our vocation. That's the general vocation that we have.
Well, a simple thing you can do, and my wife and I do it, and we've got other friends here at the press that do this, is we have, care packages, little bags of goodies, with usually a toothbrush and some water and a little snack and a little prayer card, information on community resources that you can give to people. And that's something you do. I've done this myself where I've gotten people in my car and driven in places and so on. But we just want to be careful not to kind of make it seem like everybody's always obliged to do that. That if you don't do and as you say, sometimes it can be dangerous for both homeless people and it can be dangerous for people that help other people. So the solution is both individual initiative and also social initiative.
I always like that you make that point too, because you are I really trust you on the Catholic social teaching. This is something you have thought deeply about, and neglecting the social dimension is neglecting an important part of our calling to be light and leaven in the world.
Yeah, with all due respect, we're not libertarians, so it's not just left to the individuals. It's also, we have a social responsibility, but that's for another discussion.
Libertarians, give us a call, because we do want to talk about that. Mark is exactly right. We are not libertarians, but boy, the libertarians are going to be like, wait, what? Huh? Call. We love to talk about it. Mark Brumley is the top dog. He's the president. I probably called him the editor before. I do that sometimes, but he's the president of Ignatius Press.
That's Father Fessio's the editor.
Is that's his role? And check them out at Ignatius.com. Check out the new book, The Divine Project, from Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger, 30 years of being prepared. And we'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.